For over 30 years, BHM has been the trusted CPA firm for closely held businesses across Ohio and West Virginia.
BHM has made life easier for myself and our company when it comes to tax and accounting.
At BHM, we develop top talent to tackle your most complex challenges.
A CPA firm can be the lifeblood to a successful business. If you don't feel that way about your firm, ask yourself why not.
Visit bhmcpagroup.com to schedule a consultation. BHM, the CPA firm simplifying the complex.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.
Welcome to yet another exciting podcast in the Thought Police series. This has become something that many of you now rely upon for what can only be described as informed opinion and very, very rational debate. Meantime, it's me, Mike Graham, and him, Matt Kelly. Matt, a very good afternoon to you. How are you doing?
Hello, mate. You okay? I'm a bit grisly, actually. I had a touch of food poisoning.
Yes.
24 hours ago.
That's never pleasant, is it?
It wipes you out, and I'm still in that slightly wiped out energy.
Yes, there's nothing worse than not having any kind of appetite at all, is there?
Yeah. Well, I just ate a banana. Mm. So if there's the sign of or the sound of somebody projectile vomiting a banana all over the place.
Yes, well,
that'll be me.
Let's hope that doesn't happen. I suppose we've got to start with America, haven't we? Because, I mean, regardless of what's happening here, regardless of how Prime Minister's questions have just gone on, I don't know whether you had a chance to watch it, but I thought it was particularly cringy from Starmer today. But we've got to talk about America, really, because it's incredible what's going on there, isn't it?
I mean, mate, you spent years and years and years there. What's happening now relate in that broad context?
Well, I think this is bigger than anything that ever happened when I was there. I was there when the Rodney King riots happened. He was the guy who was pulled over by the police in Los Angeles for a sort of traffic offence, and he ended up being sort of beaten to within an inch of his life. He didn't actually die. But there were massive riots around that in Los Angeles. But I don't remember there being massive riots all over the country in the way that this has caused, you know, because this incident has so polarised an already very polarised, country, which is either pro-Trump or anti-Trump, which is either pro-black or anti-black. I mean, it really has torn the nation apart. It's very sad to see, actually, from my point of view, because, I mean, I've still got family there. Where my sister lives in Connecticut, it's pretty well, I would say, insulated from that. But then there will be places like New Haven, which is a very sort of black inner city type situation. They're probably rioting there. I was talking to colleagues in New York the other day. They're rioting in Manhattan, not just in Brooklyn and the Bronx. And I mean, in parts of Brooklyn are very sort of what you might call gentrified now. And I don't know where it's going to end. I mean, I really don't, because it's always amazed me how racist America is. You know,
I was going to ask you, it's obviously, you know, most of us have probably had a holiday there or stuff like that, and you never pick up really on the true vibe of the culture. And certainly, if you'd have asked me, is America fundamentally racist, I'd have said no up until this week.
Yeah.
But now I'm out of doubt. You know?
I mean, I suppose it would be wrong to say that, that America is a racist country, but it, but when people talk about racism in this country, I always say to them, if you think this country's racist, you know, you need to go over to America and see what it's like. Wow. Because what we have is a lot of diversity in London. Outside of London, I suppose, not quite so much, because most of the ethnic minority living goes on inside cities, because that tends to be where the work is.
Yeah.
But if you go to any American city, you know, an awful lot of American cities now are completely and utterly just black. And we don't really have a black population in this country like that. We've got a very mixed race population. We've got an Asian population. But, you know, the density of the American, you know, African-American sort of cities is quite stark. You know, Detroit, for example, you've got basically you know, a city where hardly anybody white actually lives. And if you look at the way that those communities were built, when in the early days when people were working in the Ford factories, making cars and all of that, they had a white neighbourhood which was called Dearborn, right? Believe it or not, and a black neighbourhood which was called Inkster.
You're kidding.
I'm not joking. And those two towns are still there.
My God.
And if you go, and if you go to Manhattan, most of Manhattan is white, really, by and large. I mean, they have some housing, sort of housing projects like council house estates, but they're still generally, you know, there's a lot of Hispanic people that live there, people from Puerto Rico. Most of the black people live in sort of ghettoized parts of the city, you know, and we don't really have anything like that.
Yeah, it's extraordinary.
Yeah,
it's extraordinary. And what do you make about how Trump's been acting?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm actually feeling a bit sorry for Trump at the moment. And I know you're going to go mad when I say that. But the reason I'm feeling a bit sorry for him is that he's not the only president that has had to deal with something like this, right? He certainly wouldn't be the first president to order the National Guard in. And he certainly wouldn't be the first president to order in a load of troops to control the rioting and the looting. Because the looting and the rioting is the scary thing. You know, I mean, that's happening. My son, funnily enough, filmed a little video which I put out on Twitter for him. He doesn't really do Twitter, and it's just horrendous. I mean, they've basically laid waste to an entire street. You know, it looks like there's been a war there, and everything in the shop is gone. And there's about 10 shops, and he's videoed this thing. It's now been seen by about 90,000 people, right? And it's just horrifying, because he lives in a very nice part of Southern California, about sort of, you know, 10-15 miles south of Los Angeles, in a place called Huntington Beach. And it's a beautiful kind of, you know, Pacific coast neighborhood. You know, you wouldn't think that it was in any way violent. But the thing you got to remember about the American police is that they don't take any prisoners. I mean, they're not very nice people by and large, I think. And they're also looking down the barrel of a gun almost all the time, because they're assuming that everybody that they're going to arrest is probably armed.
Yeah, I mean, it is that point about the cops in America having a totally different perspective and approach is very, very true. Yeah. I remember, I think it was my first trip to New York, and asking a cop on the street for directions to something, and the guy just looked at me and said, "What do I look like, a fucking tour agent?"
That's the NYPD for you.
Yeah. And then he went off, you know. And when you see some of the things that are going on, the way they manhandle people. And there was a great, horrific video I saw on Twitter with a guy shouting, "Get off his fucking neck, get off his fucking neck." And it was the protesters again. And again, everyone they were arresting, you could see they were just putting their knees onto their necks.
Yeah.
And it's obviously the way they're trained to do it.
Yeah.
Now, you know, you hear various bits of police brutality in the UK, and there's the odd thing surfaces now and again, but this looks like it's systematic, you know, a very hard approach to policing.
Yes.
And I sent my mate, Robert Peel,
who
invented the concept of policing, and that's why they're called bobbies and all of this business. Mm. And he had nine, it's worth Googling, he had nine principles of modern policing.
Right.
And the most important thing that comes through it is that you have to be policing with the consent of the public.
Yes.
You know, the public has to support what you're doing.
Mm.
And I really don't think now the public does support the way the police are behaving in the States. And they've got a real problem where it's becoming like almost a militaristic solution to what should be a policing by consent situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine, really, how this guy died. You know, under any other circumstance, if you were that copper, surely you would say, look, he's been subdued. He's not causing any danger to anyone. He's handcuffed, or at least he's restrained. He's hardly going to get up from that position and attack anyone. And apart from the fact that all he had done anyway was commit some kind of white-collar crime, which if he'd been white, wouldn't even have probably caused him to be arrested. Because, you know, he passed a bad $20 bill, which he may have not even done knowingly. He might have done it unknowingly,
of course,
right? But, you know, at what point do those other three officers not say to the guy, just get off him?
And
it's
also,
just standing
the
there watching
is,
him. It's bizarre, isn't it?
Which I have, listen, I deliberately have not looked before or looked at the video because I've got to the point now where, you know, when you're younger, I mean, you have to because you're commentating on it on a daily basis and you need to know what you're talking about. But I've got to the point now where someone says to me, oh my God, this video is awful. I just don't want to see it now.
No.
I don't want to see it because I know what it's going to look like. And they are so affecting. But the idea that, you know, someone's got your neck, their knee on your neck and you can't breathe, then you are going to try and resist that situation as much as you possibly can to stay alive.
Especially if you know, especially if you know that this police officer might actually kill you.
Absolutely right. And that's the difference. I mean, this thing about young black men being told by their parents, you know, how they've got to behave when they're pulled over by a traffic cop.
Right.
You know, put your hands on the wheel, make sure that nobody moves, you know, and all, don't give them any opportunity to. That is an absolute horror story when you think about what does that do to people's psyche?
Well, I mean, I was talking to one of our regular contributors who works for a San Diego radio station out in California, and she was saying that they had a young producer, a young black guy who drove to work in the morning at sort of, you know, 2-3 in the morning because he was doing the breakfast show in a BMW. And she said the number of times he was stopped by the police for no reason other than the fact he was black, she said, you wouldn't believe. Yeah. And he had to put up with that. And she was like, I've never been stopped by the cops for traveling. And she drives a Corvette as well, probably quite quickly at some points. Into work, she's never been stopped, you know. And my son, actually, my oldest son, who now lives in California, I mean, I had to say to him at one point, because he had a bit of trouble when he was living still with his mother in Reston, Virginia, which is just outside of Washington, D.C. He was a skateboarder, you know, he hung around with a lot of kids that smoked dope and skateboarded and basically didn't do any harm, but were kind of, you know, always skating in places they weren't supposed to. There was a period of time where the cops were just picking on him and his mates. And I said to him, you know, you're going to have to get away from there because one day you'll do the wrong thing, you'll say the wrong thing, because he's a bit like me and, you know, a bit lippy occasionally. And I said, you know, I said, they'll kill you because, you know, that's how I feel about the American police. They would literally shoot you for no reason, you know?
Jesus Christ.
And as hard as that is to kind of even understand, that's the way of the world in America. And so therefore, if you are black and you're a young black man, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to have more run-ins with the police than you would if you were even in this country.
I'll tell you what I did the other day, because I re-watched Spike Lee's great movie, Do the Right Thing.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, have you seen it?
I have, I like Spike Lee a lot.
Yeah, and he's been very visible on the radio around this these days, and visible on the radio. That doesn't make sense, does it? But he's been very audible on the radio, but he says to him, what's reassuring is that he's seeing a whole generation of white kids now coming out to protest this. And now that I've got mixed feelings about that to a degree, because I think there's a lot of people who are, you know, this phrase virtue signaling or whatever. I think there's something about, you know, there comes a point maybe when white people should just back the hell out and say, this is a huge problem and these are the people who have the right to make this protest. And certainly if I saw a white person throwing a brick through a window to loot a store, I would not be supporting that person.
No.
I wouldn't support any looting.
No, of course not. There was an interesting piece of video doing the rounds a couple of days ago where these two women, who you only see from the back at first, all dressed in black, are spray painting a Starbucks that says with Black Lives Matter, right? They turn around and they're both white. And there's a black woman saying to them, what are you doing? You know, don't do that in my name, because that's not what we want to do. We don't want to be spray painting stuff.
Yeah.
And they're these girls are literally from Antifa, you know, this rather curiously kind of mysterious and slightly sinister organisation, which is all about sort of destabilising, you know, global economies and kind of replacing it with anarchy. And this is the trouble, that you've now got these ridiculous, because you've got, and the trouble with America, of course, you've got the white supremacist types who were in Charlotte at that time versus these Antifa guys who are all as bad as each other. And they're weaponising all of this, you know?
Yeah, and that's what I hope it doesn't become, but I fear it will, is that it'll be remembered for George Floyd. It'll just be remembered for the summer of rioting, you know? And that, like London, like the London riots, like no one could remember what the fuck that was all about by the time it was over.
No, of course not.
I remember a very funny thing going round at the time of the London riots, and it went round into your email inbox and it said, predict where there'll be a riot tonight. Mm. And then you clicked on the link and it was the JD Sports store finder.
Right.
and that, you know, it does come down to just mindlessness at the end. You know, one thing I agree with Trump on is that they are literally disrespecting the memory of George Floyd.
Well, I think it's disgusting. And I tell you what, I hope it doesn't happen here, because when I saw on Sunday afternoon that crowd gathering in Trafalgar Square, mostly white people chanting, you know, fuck the police, and chanting no justice, no peace. I actually put a tweet out on the day before Saturday, because there was a march in Peckham, of all places, right? Which, of course, is very trendy now. And I just put I just retweeted it with a remark across the top. You know, meeting of Plank Association, Peckham branch. Because you're just thinking, what is wrong with you? You know, this has happened in Minneapolis, a place probably none of them have ever even been, right? And I got sort of trolled by a bunch of people, one of whom had a Twitter handle that said Black Lives Matter, which I object to anyway, because all lives matter. You know, one life doesn't matter more than anybody else. And when you hear people saying, but, you know, we have every right to tear this country down because we've been discriminated against. No, you haven't. You want to live here as human individuals. Nobody has more rights than anybody else. That's what I believe. And I'm sorry that if you come from a different ethnic background, you've had a tougher time. That doesn't mean you can take it out on anybody else. You know, that doesn't work. For me, it's like, you know, they're supposed to be having another march today. You know, people take the knee in Hyde Park quietly on their own. I have no problem with that, even though to me it's a rather ridiculous kind of virtue signalling thing to do, because you don't have to do that. I don't need to know that you are not a racist by watching you take a knee. Do you know what I mean? I know you're not a racist because you're a good guy and I've known you a long time. I don't need to show people. Somebody said to me, are you going to take a knee today? I'm like, no. Apart from the fact that I never do anything that anyone tells me to do. I certainly don't do anything that everybody else is doing. I just immediately want to run the other way. But it doesn't make me a racist.
You'd struggle to get back up.
Well, that's the other reason, of course. Thank you for pointing that out.
But your point is so valid, because the guy who started the take the knee thing, he got kicked out of the Football League. And
Kaepernick.
You know, he had a real, real personal price to pay on that. Now, I would say, and you know what, I'd throw in the clap for the NHS on this as well. I'd say, if you're not paying a price, then fuck off.
Yeah.
You know, it's meaningless, right? You've got to pay a price for something if you care about it.
Right, and you can't just go to Hyde Park for the day and say, I'm not a racist, look at me, because I'm taking the knee. And then you head back to Dalston, where you've basically dislodged a black family because you've now decided you're a trendy kind of guy that needs to live in a part of East London that used to be a place where ethnic minority people lived. But now you've forced them out because you want to put in, you know, a soy latte bar. You know, sorry to use the dreaded stereotypes, but I'm afraid they are out there. You know, have you been to Dalston lately?
Yeah, I have to drive through it now and again, and although not for some time, but it's as described.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm hopeful that at some point or other, the looting will just stop. They'll get tired of it. My fear is that the 82nd Airborne have been flown into Washington, D.C., and if they start getting involved, you know, these are the people that train at Fort Bragg. You know, I don't think people are going to enjoy that encounter very much. You know what I mean?
The thing that is pissing me off about Trump is him waving Bibles around in front of churches.
Oh, I know.
And he made a statement in front of the Lincoln Memorial, which is traditionally off out of bounds for political stuff. Mm. And know, he made this statement in front of that giant, marvelous statue of Lincoln sitting on this on his presidential chair.
Yeah.
And somebody on Twitter said it was the second worst thing Lincoln had ever had to sit through.
I mean, it really is unfortunate that Trump is in charge. But as I say, you know, they were writing under Barack Obama, and the fact that they had a black president actually didn't do very much for the African-American communities in America. And largely that's down to the conditions under which they live, the poverty, you know, the lack of education. You know, there is a middle class black America and it's quite sizable. And there are but it's a bit like the middle class sort of black Britain. It's like saying that all the you know, there's plenty of diversity on the BBC because look at all these black and ethnic minority people who work there. But, you know, they're not really, they've all sort of gone to private school. So it's more of a class thing, you know.
Right. Obama saying that he didn't want his presidency defined by the colour of his skin. But maybe he should have done a bit more. You know, it was kind of, he had such a groundswell of goodwill when he came into power. And I think he could have possibly done a little bit more to open up the conversation around racism in the States, and maybe you missed an opportunity there.
Yeah, absolutely right. So, I mean, we'll just have to keep our fingers crossed, I suppose, that more people don't die, that more people don't get shot. But, I mean, people say this is going to be a kind of a watershed moment for America. I'm not sure it is, because we've had them before.
Do you think that this makes it more or less likely that Trump will get a second term?
I think it makes it more likely he'll win.
Yeah.
I'm afraid. Yeah. Because Biden was very quiet until yesterday because he's had his problems in the past with things that he said about the black community and black voters, right?
Yeah.
And when he did come out yesterday, he made it an attack on Donald Trump, which I think was wrong. I think he called it the wrong way because he'd been better off just being the presidential figure and calling for calm and doing what Trump's not doing. And if I was his advisor, I would have said, you need to get out there and be presidential. And instead, he kind of picked a fight with Trump, called him a narcissist, played right into his hands.
I don't rate. Joe Biden looks like a total lightweight to me.
Oh, he's absolutely useless in my view. And he was quite useless when he was in his prime. And now that he's just a slightly doddery old figure who can't seem to tell the difference between his wife and his sister, you know, he would not be a good president of the US. I can't believe they can't find somebody a bit younger in the style of a kind of Tony Blair figure from the Democratic movement that could actually galvanize people, you know.
It's extraordinary in a country of nearly 300 million people. They're the two best people they can find to run the place.
Yes, I know. It is quite incredible, isn't it? But what do you make of how things are going here? Because you watched a bit of Prime Minister's Questions. Keir Starmer starts going on the attack again, which I don't think is working for him, to be honest. He goes to an interview with The Guardian, says that the government's winging it, and unfortunately announces it on the same day, basically. It says that the new death rates are now coming down so low that they're actually below the average that they were last year in terms of, you know, not just COVID-19, but everything, right? He's also now having a go at the government for being kind of dishevelled and completely disorganised. He don't know what they're doing. And he then says, I wrote you a letter, which you didn't answer, right? And Boris goes, yeah, but I called you. Which, of course, Starmer doesn't. And he just looked like an idiot, you know. And he said, well, and he went again with this. He said, well, maybe if you won't answer the letter, I'll just have to put it into the public domain and let the people judge what it is that you didn't answer. And Boris just went, well, we spoke on the phone and you didn't disagree with anything I said. He just made him look a complete plonker.
I mean, the thing I would say is that it doesn't seem to be... If Boris Johnson was the editor of a newspaper and all of those people were his features editors and picture editor and news editor, there would be a double "see you next Tuesday" every morning because, you know, they're all over the place. But that is not how government doesn't seem to be run in that kind of, you know, professional business-like way.
No.
They all seem to have their own little agendas. And if Matt Hancock is doing X, Y, and Z one day, and Priti Patel's doing just X or nothing that day, you know, they've all got their own little. They've got the core message, but then they're all walking around their own little agendas, and it's all a bit misaligned. And I just look at some of these people, and I just think, do you know what? If you were in a business, then you wouldn't be in the C-suite. Mm. You wouldn't be sitting around the boardroom making big decisions because, frankly, I don't rate you.
Yeah.
You know, you got a feel for people and they just look like they're busking half the time.
Well, do you know, I wonder if it's this, because you know how Boris is always described as a guy who likes to surround himself with decent people. And maybe the problem here is that he has surrounded himself with decent people, but he's in the midst of what is a very, very unusual situation. So if it was a normal kind of world in which we were living, you know, the government would be probably ticking along, running fine, you know, nothing much being done in a hurry. But suddenly they're faced with this worldwide pandemic, right? And they look like they don't know what they're doing. Now, that may well be the case. It may well be that they don't know what they're doing, but I wouldn't blame them for that because I don't think anyone knows what they're doing.
No. Listen, I've got every sympathy in the world for where we are, and I'm not one of these people jumping on the wagon saying, you know, this is an outrage and you've screwed it up from the start. But I do this particular time when he's relaxed the lockdown to a significant degree. And by the way, everybody seems to have just taken that as the lockdown's over. And, you know, the sort of amount of traffic I'm seeing and people on the street and all of this business has gone up significantly, I think. But, you know, I question now if there's a second wave that hits us in the autumn and the winter, and that will screw, by the way, a lot of businesses, and a lot of people will die because it's going to get compounded by the existing flu problems. So the NHS will be even more under the cosh. If that happens, I think at that point, then people will look back at these weeks and say, you should never have relaxed the lockdown like you did, and that could be very damaging for him.
It could, and I think part of the reason why they did, and I think I've said this to you before, they did the lockdown when they did it, was because they couldn't politically countenance having dead bodies in the streets and you know, trucks taking dead bodies away like they did in Italy, because that really looks awful, right? However, that means that they did the right thing because they didn't allow the NHS to become overwhelmed. But I spoke to a doctor this week who basically said that the virus is definitely on the way out. There's no European countries at the moment who have reversed the lockdown and who have come out of it, who have had a second peak. Spain, I think, for the last 48 hours has had no deaths at all from coronavirus, right? And Italy's in the same boat. And so he predicted, he said there won't be a second peak. He just said there won't be. Because the virus has now kind of spread spread itself so thinly, if you like, that even if you now get it, it wouldn't be as bad as if you got it in the middle of April when it was stronger. You know what I mean? So, I mean, and I think there has to be a balance. They have to, and they've been under great pressure, don't forget, to lift the economy out of the gloom as well. So, so they have to do something. This is why my theory about Cummings and his trip being completely and utterly staged and leaked by him is that everyone in the country has now decided it's all over. I mean, I went down to Sussex at the weekend to see the kids and the dog, and the traffic jams were where they used to be before the lockdown.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and I mean, the beaches are all full. Do you see Bournemouth Beach? You see those idiots at Durdle Door jumping off the cliffs? I mean, you know, talk about Darwin's, method. Really, God almighty. And you know, people jumping off the falls in Richmond up in Yorkshire. I think, you know, McDonald's is opening this week back to, you know, there's a lot of pubs now in London who are now serving, basically serving drinks to take away. But right next to, say, a park, and people are just going to sitting in the park and drinking. It's like being in a beer garden, you know?
My fear is that we will all go back to exactly how it was and nothing will change because it's all too baked into us. But I think there's so many good things that could have changed, you know, or should have changed, and I still hope do change.
Right.
But my fear is that human nature being as it is, maybe in 6 months' time, we'll be looking back and it'll all be exactly as it was a year ago.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, because it came upon us very quickly. And, you know, if you look at places like Italy, you know, clearly it's not the same as it was. But there are people walking about. They're sitting down in piazzas having coffee with each other. If you look around other parts, I mean, I was talking to my sister in America. You know, restaurants are opening up there on an almost daily basis. You know, there's never been a lockdown in places like Florida. I'm not saying this is an example because who knows. Yeah. But I think in the end, we will see that every single country ends up pretty much at the same place everywhere else is at. You know, the economy's damaged. Yeah. You know, the same kind of death toll per million people is happening.
Yeah.
Because in the end, it's the virus that, that gets you. But don't forget, the vast majority of people who get the virus are not in any way really even hurt by it.
How did the Spanish flu in the in 1918 or whatever it was, how did that end? Do you know?
Do you know, that's a good question. I suspect just like this one is and will end, it peters out.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I said to a doctor the other day, of course I'm going to claim credit for this theory, right? I said to this doctor, is it like a hurricane, for example, when you have a virus like this? You know, the hurricane's very, very strong. It's got huge, you know, 200-mile-an-hour winds. But when it hits the land, when it comes off the Atlantic and hits North Carolina, suddenly it slows down and the wind becomes a tropical storm. And then it peters out to such an extent that by the time it's crossed about 100 miles of the mainland of America, it's not there anymore. And he said, that's a very good analogy. I've never heard it explained like that. But he said, that works. And that's kind of what's happening, I think.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe, you know, again, and we've said this before, maybe we'll look back and think it was all a massive overreaction. And
I think a part of me thinks that now, but I still understand why they had to do what they did. You know, the Swedish model, which Peter Hitchens is always banging on about, you know, they're now saying we actually think we probably didn't do the right thing because they've now got a death rate which is as bad as ours. But they're saying and their economy to some extent hasn't suffered as much as ours, but it's still suffered. Because, you know, nobody's going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and it's all very well saying, oh, but the restaurants are all open. Yeah, but nobody's actually going to eat in them.
Yeah. Think about all those frozen meatballs in IKEAs everywhere.
Well, just did you see the queuing? I mean, I'll tell you what. I don't know what's going on with this country, but one of the other things I did last weekend, because the previous weekend I noticed on the way home that they'd opened a drive-through Burger King. Now, I don't normally go to Burger King, but I thought, you know, I haven't had a fast food hamburger for 8 weeks. So I said to the kids, I'm going to bring you some Burger King, right? And so I stopped and I went in the drive-thru and it was literally 5 minutes. I thought, this is going to be ages, right? But there was no queue, five cars in front of me. I was in and out in 5 minutes. But did you see the queues for IKEA when they reopened IKEA? People were in line. No. People were in line, I kid you not, in the car park for 3 hours. I mean...
What were they buying?
Well, they weren't buying meatballs because apparently the meatball section's closed off, so they're not the food section's not open, the cafe's not open. So presumably they were buying those really annoying Billy bookshelves or something. I just don't know.
Well, hang on a minute. What would you wait 3 hours for to get into an IKEA to buy?
Nothing. Well, listen, I wouldn't wait 3 hours to do anything. I hate queuing. Yeah. You know, if I get in a traffic jam, it drives my kids and their mother mad. If we hit a traffic jam, I'm taking evasive action. I don't care how much longer it takes me to get somewhere, but I have to be continually moving. If I'm stuck somewhere without moving, I can't handle it.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You might have
adult ADHD.
Well,
like
I think I have got ADHD. Funnily enough, my older son, the Californian one, was diagnosed as having ADHD, right? And unbeknownst to me, when he went to school, because one of the rules they have in America, which is what I don't like about going to, the state-run system, is that if you're diagnosed as having ADHD as a kid, you're only allowed to attend the school if you take Ritalin, which is the...
Really?
You're not allowed to not take it. If you say, I'm not giving that to my son, they say, well, you'll have to go to private school then. The way they run it, right? And I didn't find this out because I'd got divorced from his mother and it wasn't very, pleasant. And so she wasn't exactly sharing any of this information. But as a result of me having to go after her in a court because she tried to stop me seeing the kids, we found all this out, right? And it turns out she'd gone to see, whoever it was that diagnosed him with ADHD. And we got the papers back and it said when they asked her, is there anyone else in the family that has it? She said, I had it. And I was like, hang on a minute, I've never been diagnosed as having ADHD. But it went down in black and white as if I had somehow passed on this ADHD to him.
Well, I'll tell you what, mate. I mean, I now realise, look back at my school days and, I'm a smart enough fella, but I couldn't sit down and study. So academic, I got my O-levels, that was fine.
Yeah, I was actually the same.
Yeah, and I think, and so I know for a fact that I have got ADHD.
Really?
And... yeah, and from time to time I take a medication called Elvance,
okay.
And if I need to, which is like the sort of new version of Ritalin,
right?
And if I need to sit down and concentrate and do a piece of work that's going to take 4 or 5 hours
right.
of concentration, then that lets me do it. It's like flicking a switch off.
So how does it feel though? So before you know that you need to say take that, are you anxious? Are you kind of fidgety? What are you?
No, it's just not being able to. You suddenly feel super motivated to do stuff and to get something done. You
okay.
know, that's the difference. Rather than what I'm normally like, which is sort of, you know, I'll be engaged like brilliantly for 20 minutes and then I'll get bored and I'll go and do something else or I'll think about something else. And so I've always been very good at that kind of big sort of top level thing. But when you get down into the weeds of things, then my mind is wandering. But if I've got to be over the detail of something, then this thing is, it's like magic. So what I'd say to parents, if you've got a kid who you think might be ADHD, but you're worried about medication, I think the analogy the guy used for me was, he said, it's like when you get old and your vision starts going, you get yourself a pair of glasses.
Yeah.
You know, it's your vision's not coming back. Get yourself some glasses and that solves the problem.
Yes.
And for me, this Elvance med does exactly that.
Right. Okay. Interesting. So I've never taken anything for it, you know, but my experience at school, very similar to yours. I mean, I did O-levels. I remember being told by my careers officer at the Cardinal Vaughan Grammar School for Boys that if I didn't get 5 O-levels, I'd be a dustman. To which I said, well, I wouldn't mind being a dustman. I said, it looks like quite a good job. You work in the morning, you have afternoons off. And you probably get paid pretty well. And he looked at me like I'd gone mad, you know. And I actually got 4 O-levels, right? So I didn't even make the 5th one. I took 9, got 4, managed to get into a FE college to do 4, and then I did 4 A-levels, and then I went to university, but I didn't finish the degree. But I've always been useless at studying, you know, absolutely hopeless. Yeah. It's not
well,
for
I
me.
Look back now, and I say to my kids, you know, it's not that they're listening, but I say to them, you know, this period, the opportunity to go to university and study something you're interested in for 3 years is, it's unbelievable.
Even if it's only sex and drugs and rock and roll.
but I would love now, you know, if I lost my job or something like that and I couldn't get another job, I would really like to go back to university. Go to university. I never went to university.
Did you not?
To university. No. I got 1 A-level in geography and that was it.
Yeah. Well, you haven't done too badly. I mean, you know where Argentina is because you've been there to work. So, I mean, I would say blow off the old the geographical sort of equivalency and just enjoy your life, you know?
Well, totally. But it's an interesting thing as well. When you leave school as an underachiever, there's something about you, I think, that wants to constantly go on and achieve.
Yes.
You become very, very keen to prove to yourself, I think, that you are the person you hoped you would be. You know?
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure I've definitely got a chip on my shoulder about all these kind of overqualified academic types who think they're brilliant. As I just look at them and go, well, you might think you're brilliant, mate, but you can't beat me in an argument, you know?
Yeah.
And so maybe there's something to that, you know?
Well, I remember Piers's mate, Martin Crudders, who
was the lawyer.
Was the lawyer, and now is chief executive of a bunch of race courses.
He is, I always run into him at Piers's party, and he always says, you must come racing with us, and I never
very
do it.
Good guy. Very nice guy.
Yeah.
And I remember him saying to me, we'd had some argument over some story in the Mirror, and he said, Matt, you're very well balanced. You've got chips on both shoulders.
Yes. Well, typical Scouser, some people would say, but then it wouldn't be me saying that, obviously. Well, listen, I think we've come to the end of another glorious podcast, so enjoy the rest of the week, and we'll see you in a week's time.
Take care, everyone.
Take care. Safe. Cheers, mate.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.